Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
He said he is unable to work as, in his words, he has had to give his laptop and phone to the police. I of course asked why would he do that, and he said they came to his house at 3 a.m. asked to come in and said he was a witness to a crime and asked if they could take away all his electronics.
My immediate reaction was this was a dawn raid. This was not the police being considerate about what the neighbours might think. We were able to uncover that actually he had been arrested and he had been bailed. So in this situation, the stance that we took was, well, in the absence of your laptop, you can't work. That's because of your conduct. So we're not going to pay you. Employees, obviously, they don't want to prejudice their position, worried about being fired, worried about income. But at the same time, you lie to your employer, you're making a rob for your own back.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Episode 18. Welcome back to the HRER podcast. I'm Ollie.
You sounded like a newsreader then. That was very kind of like, welcome back to the HRER podcast.
Don't set energy. So I went with noise.
Cheerful energy.
Yeah.
Come on, cheerful Charlie. Let's go.
Episode 18. Yeah.
So you're Ollie, I'm Alyssa, and we're here for episode 18.
We are. Big story today. We're going to jump in, straight in. No small talk. We're going to address the problems at hand. This one's about a house raid. And in brackets, it says drugs.
Yeah, so it's, I'd say the main issue probably isn't the house raid. There's lots going on around this, but you know what? Yeah, dive in, tell us the story and we'll get cracking.
Let's go. So this is the email. Hi Alyssa, new one for you. Hope you can help as I feel out of my depth. Alex, who has been with us for just over 2 years, he has turned into work after the weekend and come straight into my office. He said he is unable to work as, in his words, he has had to give his laptop and phone to the police. I of course asked why would he do that? And he said they came to his house at 3 a.m. asked to come in and said he was a witness to a crime and asked if they could take away all his electronics. He said it was also so that him and his wife wouldn't be embarrassed in front of the neighbours. He then confessed that he voluntarily went with them at 3 a.m. to be interviewed. I feel that I need to get to the bottom of this. Given the sector we work in, the laptops and the systems are very sensitive. We don't exactly know where our devices are and why they've been taken. He has asked for another laptop so he can work. Help.
So, quite a situation we've got here. When the client rang with this story, my immediate reaction was, this was a dawn raid. This was not the police being considerate about what the neighbours might think.
For those at home who don't know what a dawn raid is.
So, dawn raids happen at any time of the day, but generally they are done with an element of surprise so that certain items can be seized and taken into evidence by the police. They can't just decide to do these. They have to have, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but they have to have enough either evidence to be able to, that sort of thing, to be able to allow them to search premises. So when the client rang and said that at 3 a.m. he'd voluntarily handed over his laptop and his phone and gone in to be interviewed, I was saying, you know, this sounds like a dawn raid and it sounds like he's been arrested, likely face down on his lawn in his pyjamas.
Which, of course, he's going to lie about.
Of course he is. So the key here was he'd obviously been released. He had his story that he was sticking to. He didn't. This took quite a while to unpick this one. And the initial sort of pressing thing was that he was asking for a laptop so he could work. So he absolutely required a laptop to work. He couldn't log onto their systems from any other device. And actually, the police had taken everything that was capable of connecting to the internet away from his house anyway. So that was the first question we had, which is, can we give him another laptop? Now, the key here is, if he is unable to work, what is his status? So they were saying, do we suspend him?
Garden leave?
What do we do with him? Now, If you suspend an employee, suspension is with pay. Suspension is a neutral act. It's not like when you're at college or school, when you do something really naughty and you're suspended from school as a punishment.
You can't go.
In the workplace, suspension is a neutral act and it's done with pay. So usually to allow an employer to investigate or get to the bottom of something with you out of the way so you can't interfere with things, or so that employees feel that they can freely give witness statements, talk, that sort of thing. But the crucial thing is, it's with pay. In this situation, we have no idea really what's going on yet. We don't know how long he's going to be without a laptop for. So if the employer were to suspend him, that could go on for several months, where we have an employee on full pay, at home, not doing any work. So in this situation, because their immediate reaction was like you, do we put him on garden leave? Do we suspend him? And we sort of took a step back and said, right, so the issue is here, he cannot work because he doesn't have the laptop. That is not through something that the company has done. This has been his own behavior, actions, whatever it is, that means that he no longer has the equipment that he needs to do his job. We have work available for him. Say, look, if you can produce your laptop, you can come to work and you can get on with work and you'll be paid. So in this situation, the stance that we took was, well, in the absence of your laptop, you can't work. That's because of your conduct. So we're not going to pay you.
So you suspended without
pay? We didn't suspend him. So we didn't suspend him. We said, we're not going to pay you because you are unable to come and do your work because of your own conduct. So it's a very, very sort of thin line that we're trying to tread here, because one, the company doesn't have endless resources, but two, there's a suggestion at the beginning that he's not being entirely honest with them either about what's going on. So to kind of keep their powder dry, we said, well, if the police return your laptop tomorrow, great, you can come back to work, you can do your work. But in the absence of being able to do your work, we're under no obligation to pay you. So
was that in the contract or the policy? Or?
So our obligation as an employer is to provide work for an employee. The obligation on the employee is to turn up and do that work. So we're fulfilling our side of the employment relationship. We are offering work. We have work for him to do. He is unable to fulfill his side of the bargain because of his own conduct.
Okay.
So actually the issue lies with him. So this individual immediately took legal advice. So when the solicitor's letter arrives, you're sort of praying that you've advised the client correctly, that we've not landed them in breach of contract. And his solicitor had very little to say about it.
Okay.
Other than, you know, obviously we want this to resolve really quickly. Is there anything else you can basically give him to do that's not on a laptop? And we didn't.
What kind of business was it? Oh, curious.
So it was technology based, but because of they had government contract work, they had a level of security clearance. So they had to use their own laptops and certain levels of encryption and security. So like that, you know, they could just say to him, well,
work from your own laptop.
Pick up your wife's iPad and do some work. Yeah, it had possible. To be on company devices. So that's sort of how we started this one, is we didn't have that knee-jerk reaction of let's suspend him or put him on garden leave. We thought, well, actually, let's assess this situation and think, one, we don't think he's being entirely truthful, and two, this could rumble on for a long time. What can we do to protect the company position? And that's what we decided to do.
Okay. Questions as an employer. You've kind of gone through the initial steps the employer took there, haven't you?
I mentioned it on another podcast. It's not like the old days where, you know, the police come around to someone's house and they take the hat off and sit on the sofa and that's how they communicate.
Notepad.
You can email the police. You can ring them up. You can ask for, you know, ask to speak to a certain officer. And you can have a dialogue with them. So we said, look, we're the employer. This is who we are. Believe you have our devices. Can we understand at least where they're held and how long you're likely to have them for? Mm-hmm. The answer to both of those was, yes, we have them. We have no idea. So not necessarily especially helpful, but at least we knew the police had them. Because at this point, all we had was his word for it that they had been confiscated by the police. So we were able to follow that up at the very least and check that as a detail. Now, we then had the query where we thought, well, okay, so the police have taken the laptop. Do we give him another device? And so we asked the police, well, can we give this individual another laptop? And we couldn't exactly get a straight answer, but you could tell that they were uncomfortable with us doing this.
How much can they really tell you?
Well, they can't prejudice their own investigation.
Right.
So at this point then they rang me and I said, well, look, we'll call the guy in for interview and we're going to ask him some questions, see if we can get to the bottom of what's gone on.
Yeah.
And because he'd taken the step of instructing a solicitor on the fact that he hadn't been paid, we were able to uncover that actually he had been arrested. and he had been bailed. So we asked for the conditions of his bail, which were that he was not to obtain or use any electronic devices that were capable of connecting to the internet. So had we given him a laptop, it would have put him in breach of his bail.
And he'd have gone to prison?
So he could be recalled to prison. I'm not entirely sure, but you know what conditions of that were. But this was becoming a really complex situation. And my concern as an advisor was, well, this person was proactively trying to get a new device from us, knowing that a condition of his bail was that he was not to be using any devices that the one, either without permission from the police or the police weren't aware of. So before we did anything, really, it was making sure that we collect that information, that we interview him, we try and get as much information out of the police as we can so that we can put a plan together as to how we're going to deal with this situation.
Paint a bit of a bigger picture. Gather the information, as you generally do, don't you, in these cases. The second question is an employer. The average cost for employees to defend an employment tribunal claim is $8,500. Crikey. What legal obligations does an employer have when dealing with law enforcement requests for company property? Should an employer involve legal counsel?
I would say definitely involve legal counsel. So the police can ask for things, and often it's beneficial to cooperate. They're going to have usually a good reason for asking for things, but ultimately, if they need to seize something, often they have the power to do that. In this situation as well, so we can... and say uncover what was actually going on here. The guy was involved in a drug ring. So it was super, super serious.
He was using the computer to...
So there were supplier lists.
Oh my God.
Customers. There was, he was essentially at the centre of what was going on. And what we believe he was trying to do when he was asking for a company laptop is that he was trying to hide things on company servers. And I think the police believed he was also trying to do that as well. So actually by cooperating with the police, they were able to review the company systems and sort of clear them from being involved in any sort of dark web stuff. And eventually the device came back to them. But actually there was something really, really serious going on with this employee. I think he's now in prison, where he rightly should be. But had we not dealt with this properly, he could still potentially have had a legal claim. Even though he is an absolute criminal, you know, he's involved in a drug ring. But if we had not dealt with him properly by doing a proper investigation, by following our policies and procedures, we could still have ended up in a position where he could have brought an employment tribunal claim for breach of his employment rights. Because even though he's a criminal, he still has employment rights. So it's crucial that we don't have those knee-jerk reactions, that just because we think someone is a bit of a wrong'un, that we still follow those policies and procedures and that we still protect the business.
It's easy doing it as well. Just be like, oh, he's done something bad. The police are involved. Let's throw the book at him. But you can't do that, apparently.
Well, there was a case recently, I don't know enough, I haven't read it in detail. It's just sort of glancing through the legal press recently where I believe someone was dismissed. Either they were arrested or questioned on either manslaughter or something like that. Company, knee-jerk reaction, dismissed. Unfair dismissal. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough about it. What I'll do, you know what, we'll be very kind of blogger about it. We'll put a link to the case below. So I'll find that, just because it's quite an interesting read generally for HR people about how we approach this sort of thing. But it's really, really important, even where it's something like this, where we've got someone, you know, dawn raid, arrested on his lawn, house search, property seized, center of a drug kingpin ring, that we still take that breath, we investigate, we follow our policies and procedures, we engage with other authorities, we don't have those knee-jerk reactions, and we deal with it properly.
You'd think you'd have him like bang to rights, wouldn't you? Like you say, after all that, but...
Well, in this, we also had to be really clear on what it is that he'd done wrong in terms of his employment. So he had been dishonest in the first instance when he said that the police had politely come knocking at 3 o'clock so that he wasn't embarrassed in front of the neighbours and so it didn't frighten the children. He also said that he'd gone voluntarily for interview. He hadn't been arrested. It was a dawn raid.
Right.
So we had an element of dishonesty there that we could work with. So as in one of our previous podcasts, when we talked about that, levels of dishonesty and those sort of grey areas, you know, that's relatively serious is probably enough there. So when we're getting into breach of trust and confidence, he's made things a little bit easier for us there. We didn't have to wait in this one for a drug conviction. It was enough to say, you know what, you haven't been transparent enough about what it is that's going on here, we can't trust you anymore. And that's the route that we went down here, was dishonesty rather than...
Criminal
drugs. Yeah. You know, that was the police's problem at this point. And it kind of gave us an easier and a cleaner route. Because if you've got an employee who is arrested on, suspicion of criminal activity, for an employer, we still have to do an investigation and come to a decision on a reasonable basis as to whether or not we think somebody's guilty or not, which can be very difficult if you've got the police doing an investigation. An employer isn't going to have access to as many witnesses or the ability to perhaps...
Case files.
Come to a decision themselves. Where you've got an employer who lies to you, that does make this situation a little bit easier. So actually in this situation, by taking that advice early and coming to me and saying, look, we've got this situation, we don't quite know how it's going to unfold, we were able to catch him in that lie.
So as soon as you said like... As soon as they told you that he'd lied about it, did something go in your head?
As soon as they said to me that the police had come early in the morning, to make things easier for him, I was like,
that's no nonsense, mate.
No nonsense.
Yeah.
And particularly then when we were sort of challenging him on things, and I provided them with some interview questions to ask him, and the point was to understand how dishonest he was being. We already knew he was being dishonest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, come on, mate, push the lie even further, make this easier for us.
Make it worse, come on.
Yeah.
Third question, mm-hmm. As an employer, are there any security tools or systems that might have detected and prevented this type of situation earlier?
So in this situation, he wasn't using the company systems, thankfully, to run his criminal enterprise. But typically, employers do have lots of tools and security measures at their disposal that are vastly underused. So as long as you have a policy about monitoring of systems, email, sites that people are accessing, then really we should be either spot checking or being very clear with employees about the standards that we are expecting. And if we have these tools, that where it's justified that we use them. So I dealt with something, it was actually with a law firm, and it was something that we... the similar situation that we covered in one of the earlier podcasts with the guy, I think he was playing poker and watching snooker all day on his computer.
Yeah, he weren't doing much like...
That had they actually been using the systems that they had installed, it would have flagged it rather than us having to see a deterioration in performance. So yes, there are tools and systems out there that can detect unusual activity or people accessing unauthorized sites or dark web and things like that. But obviously the tools are only as good as the
people
person
using,
them.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move on to questions to ask as an employee now. I'm just conscious of time. Mm-hmm. How should an employee communicate this incident to their employer to ensure clear understanding besides being honest?
Yeah, so honesty is the best policy. Not to sound like a Winnie the Pooh book or anything like that, but why was Winnie the Pooh the first thing I thought of then?
I don't know.
Who knows? Anyway, honesty is the best policy. Employees, obviously, they don't want to prejudice their position, worried about being fired, worried about income, but at the same time, you lie to your employer, you're making a rob for your own back.
Mm-hmm.
As an employee in this situation, he will have had access to a duty solicitor, so a criminal defence solicitor from the off. So will have been receiving advice about the implications about what was going on. This is not someone who was in ignorance as to his situation. So he was intentionally lying. It's not that he didn't understand the criminal process.
Oh, he knew.
So very much, I say, honesty from the off, transparency. And look, you know, if the writing's on the wall, you're going to lose your job. Well, at least we've not lied about it.
And
this chap had bigger problems than losing his job, let's put it that way. He's been deprived of his liberty for a long time. So
I can imagine if he's at the centre of sounds like a drug baron of sorts.
Well, I can, not that I know, I have no empathy for this person at all, because drugs ruin lives. But the guy's wife had no idea. She was totally in the dark.
No idea.
She was totally in the dark about everything. So the Dawn raid was the first time that she was aware. And there was a family, you know, they had kids. So for this guy, you know, when kind of the curtain came down, he said, look, I was trying to stop my life from falling apart. And I think he thought that if he could kind of keep his job, keep up the facade, that the police investigation would essentially go away, or they wouldn't have enough to pin him.
It works though, is it?
It's not how it works. It was trying to keep that house of cards from falling down in this situation. But like I say, it might sound like I have empathy for this chap. I don't.
You do for his wife, though.
I do for his wife and his family, obviously.
Can't be nice.
But yeah, I would say honesty is the starting point. Because if you want to buy any faith with your employer, honesty and transparency is the way to go.
Next point involves a stat. UK businesses lose more than £183 million as a direct result of employee theft. Since the seized property belongs to the company, doesn't the company have a legal obligation to replace it?
So if the property had been seized because of something the company had done, then yes, they would, as we've talked about, that employment relationship, the employer has the obligation to provide work, the employee has the obligation to do it.
Yeah.
If the employer is not providing work because they can't provide the tools or equipment to do it, they're potentially in breach of contract. So say if the company had done something wrong that meant that this laptop was removed, they would have needed to provide the employee with another one. However, it's the employee's conduct that has resulted in this, so they don't have a legal obligation to replace it in this situation.
Okay, so it's the fault of the employee, no bother. Mm-hmm. Lovely. Final one as an employee. How might this incident affect the employee's future with the company? And what steps can they take to mitigate any negative impacts? The second part's important there.
Yeah. So first part, employee had no employment future. He went to prison.
Done.
So yeah, that's pretty clear cut. I'm sure he had some sort of gainful employment within the prison system. Who knows? When you come out of prison, we're then onto the whole unspent convictions, which I think we've done other podcast stuff on. So
yeah,
check out the channel to find the content on that one. I'm sure we can put a link
somewhere.
That was
the murder one, wasn't it? The guy who was a murderer who changed windows and stuff.
Yeah. So obviously challenging for anybody coming out of the prison system to find employment, particularly with unspent convictions. But yeah, check out the How Did I Employ a Murderer podcast or whatever we called it.
I think it was something.
Yeah. For all the detail on that one. In terms of steps to mitigate negative impacts for an employee, it's that transparency and honesty. So, I mean, with this one, I don't know how he would get on in a conversation with a future employer when he's released from prison. You know, I've really had a chance to work
on myself.
Depends
what it's doing.
Yeah.
Timpsons do a job, don't they? Timpsons employ cons.
Yeah. So there's lots of employers that are engaged in either with charities or with initiatives about, you know, rehabilitation and giving people the opportunity when they come out of prison, to get back into work. But I would say from an employee perspective, it's being open about your experience. So, you know, showing that you are someone who's got resilience, that you are open to change, that you've been rehabilitated, and not lying. So if you're dishonest about something, then that's obviously going to have a serious negative impact on your ability to find work.
I think it'd be real admirable and in a way entertaining if someone came into a job interview and they're an ex-con, mm-hmm, and they're like, right, what experiences, and they just give you a prison story.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fair crack.
Yeah,
like that's like, yeah, you did with the hot pants story, that shows.
Yeah. You know, can you tell us about a situation where you've managed difficult relationships? Say, well, this one time I had a fight in prison.
So what, see?
Yeah, exactly.
Pen 8, whatever. Yeah.
There's definitely life skills, valuable life skills that are learnt in prison, and things, mm-hmm, like, you know, resilience, strength of character, you know, confidence. You know, for some people, it can be something where it can bring out the best. And the whole point of the prison system is rehabilitation as well as punishment. But rehabilitation is where we take the positive impacts from it. Not everybody comes out that way. You know, some people end up in that cycle, you know, whether they're in, they're out, they're in, they're out. But I would say if you're someone who is open-minded about employing people who are going through that rehabilitation process, it can be really rewarding.
You can read a lot of books in prison as well. I find that quite useful. It's a lot of knowledge to be gained. Just sit there, peace and quiet. I don't see what
I don't think there's peace and quiet in prison, but...
No, I don't.
You watch too many films.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think you'd be one of those people who'd like be like, oh yeah, go in there and come out ripped and having done a degree and read loads?
I'd have to go into prison to do that. I've done all that already. Yeah, probably would, yeah. I think I would. I'd use the time well. I'll try to. But I'm never going to go to prison. Mum, of course. Because my mum watches this. Lessons learned. What emergency measures can HR departments take to stop this sort of thing from happening in future?
So we've obviously got the recruitment stuff that we've talked about in our other podcasts. So making sure that we know who it is that we're employing. When it comes to things happening when someone is employed, it's taking advice early. So if something happens, you know, having that strategy to deal with a situation like this so that you're fully informed, you know what's going on to the best that you possibly can, and also that you can put steps in place to make sure we're still following policies and procedures so we can protect the business as well.
Excellent. And closing thoughts. So what happened with this situation? You mentioned he went to prison.
Yeah, so he, yes, it was a dawn raid. Yes, he was a drug kingpin. He did go to prison. He is still in prison. He's likely to be in prison for a long time. Mm. And eventually the company got the laptop back.
Oh, jolly good.
So yeah, it was...
Everyone wins.
And they didn't end up in employment tribunal. So reasonably good outcome for the employer in that there was minimal kind of collateral damage within the company. Because we took those steps not to put him on paid suspension, it didn't impact them massively financially. I think while he was off initially, they covered him with a temp, but he didn't have that access to the workforce. So when we talked about the murderer and the sort of ripples through the workforce, because there was concerns that they hadn't done their compliance checks properly. So, you know, this individual had been exposed to the workforce.
He was in the office, wasn't he?
Yeah. In this situation, because we knew about it nice and early, we were able to take decisive action. And it's something that I've been asked to talk about recently. So on BBC Radio Wales, I've been interviewed a couple of times about the Hugh Edwards situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what the BBC could have done in that situation. So he was obviously paid out of public funds for 6 months. And they said, well, he lied when, you know, the questions were initially brought by the police. He lied and said, no, this isn't me. This isn't what I've done. And it turns out then when he is arrested, he's pled guilty at the earliest opportunity. And
yeah, pay rise, didn't he?
Yeah,
the last 12 months, he got pay rise from the last 12.
So the questions are then, well, what could have been done earlier in this situation? And, you know, we read about that there were whistleblowers this time last year, that there wasn't actually an investigation by the BBC, or if there was, it wasn't broad enough to uncover either any dishonest statements that were made. He was given the benefit of the doubt. This individual, we did not give him the benefit of the doubt. Yes, you know, he's an employee. We have a duty of care towards him. But what he was saying was not stacking up.
Regardless of that.
Yes, yeah, so we were proactive.
He's a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Like getting things shipped in, I imagine.
Yeah, ruining lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, on a mass scale.
Yeah.
So it's
about being proactive, doing our investigations, being thorough, taking advice early so that we don't let a situation rumble on, because that Hugh Edwards situation has become utterly toxic for the BBC.
Well, crazy. I don't mean the last we speak out of the bear. It's not the first time it's happened at the BBC, is it? That's all we've got time for today, folks. I know you'd love to keep watching. Have you got anything you want to...
Just the usual. So thank you for continuing to listen. And thank you so much for the suggestions as well. And for the clients who are desperately asking us to cover their content. We're trying to get through all the scenarios that we can with these. And we're continuing to enjoy doing it.
We'll see you next time. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in. And don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.